Spastic gun sharing, sarcastic gun caring, fat-headed assholes with stories to share. Although they bore us, they podcast in chorus, answering fans as the show fills the air. Afterthought, think they're funny, but they're really not. Not as clever as they might have thought. This is the Afterthought. RPG misery is part of their history, along with the secret of gummy berry juice. The Patreon's growing, they take pride in knowing they'll spend all your money on pizza and booze. Afterthought, think they're funny, but they're really not. Not as clever as they might have thought. This is the Afterthought. They are the gummy bears.
Hello and welcome to Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every other week we get together and answer fan questions. We used to also get together and discuss topics, but honestly, I just got sick of that. And that's me, Jeff. I think my co-host John also sick of that, right, John?
No.
Oh, no.
I have a topic. I have such topics to show you.
Great. All right, well, I guess I'll look forward to that. Normally, the topic in discussion is something having to do with the last RPG we covered. And what was that?
Why, we covered Actually for Realsies 7th C.
Actual for Real 7th C instead of just avoiding it like the plague?
Indeed. Like the White Plague?
Like the White Plague. Now, there was one thing about 7th C I kind of wanted to say. That based on our review, you may have been led to think that it was a John Wick game by John Wick and starring John Wick. He actually was just one of a larger team. That's actually an AEG Games game and not just a John Wick product. So, to the folks who also wrote that game, good work. Congrats, you managed to work with him for a while. I don't want to give him more fame and celebrity than his legend really deserves. So,
yeah.
There were a lot of other people involved in the production of 7th C, but what did you want to talk about?
Okay, so, being that this got brought up and we had a huge thread on it on the actual website, there was the notion of, in this game, one of the things you buy is a background. And the background is
Nemesis,
what would normally be a drawback that would give you points in other games, but you buy it in this game. And we've talked about this, whether it's you have a nemesis or you have a dark secret or you have whatever in your past. Normally, it would give you some points, but all that really does is draw the spotlight to you randomly, and you get to take over the story occasionally, but it doesn't really do anything.
Right.
And so this brought about a debate on whether or not this was a thing that was true or whether only bad DMs would do that. And I think for my part, it's one of those things where I don't think it necessarily should go either way. Like, I don't think it's something you should spend points on.
Or receive points for.
No. It should be a thing you write in the backstory of your character. If there's a great love that you lost, or if there's someone who wronged you in the past, or if there's some treasure that you're seeking with all of your heart, then that's a thing that is your character, not something that your character has or does.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you on this one. I think most people, when they're building their character, should be loading down the character sheet with all these interesting meaty hooks for the DM to reach into and mess with. You want to have a whole bunch of levers on your character to control the story. My character has a nemesis. My character has an interesting past. My character has a long-lost love. All that kind of stuff. And you want as many of them as you can come up with, you know, justifiable excuses for. Even if you're not going to go down every road and examine every aspect of your character, it helps with the eventual storytelling.
Yeah, and when you end up having as a disadvantage something like Nemesis or Dark Secret, then all that does is say to the DM is, look, I want to roleplay, but I'd like to get paid for it in character points.
Yeah.
And when it's this way, where in 7th C you actually buy the points for it and then it comes back as XP, it's almost the same thing of saying, I'm going to make an investment in getting better in the future by putting points into being the star eventually.
Yeah. That was a really interesting discussion. I mean, for the most part, we tried to kind of stay out of it and just let people have their discussion on there and bring it here. One of the things I noticed was people saying that if you purchase a Nemesis, it should be occasionally when you're playing the game, there's suddenly a problem in your way that wouldn't normally have been in your way when you're playing the game, and that it's the DM's job to kind of either make things easy or difficult based on the number of obstacles that should be in your way.
Well, yeah, there was brought up the Glomgold as a Nemesis. So he's not going to show up and try to, like, stab Scrooge McDuck.
Mm-hmm.
But what he is going to do is try and get the item that Scrooge was after, or sabotage the expedition that he was on, whatever it is, without coming into direct conflict.
Right. And, of course, that's Glomgold, Flintheart Glomgold, the arch nemesis of Scrooge McDuck. Not to be confused with Golfgood, who is the excellent at golfing nemesis of Huge McDuck.
Oh, yeah. That golf-themed wrestler
that
always comes out and is like, "Ock me four iron."
Yeah. He's like, "Ah, from the country that was invented golf." And then he golfs at him real hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a different character.
Yeah.
Don't get him confused, just so you know. My thing is, I always feel like a good D&D, but any RPG session is going to be divided up into a series of encounters. You know, okay, this is a story set piece. This is a story set piece. And it's not necessarily that the number of those that you have to do in a day is determined by how many obstacles the DM needs to pull out of a chart, but more or less how long it is until the game is over.
Yeah. And that's one of those things, is when you have something in your past that you've paid points for or got points for, it ends up becoming something where you're essentially, like, daring the DM. Because I've said it before for Nemesis or Dark Secret or anything like that, either the GM doesn't use it,
yeah,
and you just got free points and it doesn't matter, or he does use it and now you get to be in the spotlight, and you still got your points, and then you have that additional dare of, do you make this nemesis so powerful that it does for reals kill you, or is it just like a standard encounter but themed around your character?
Right. I think it's fine. Glomgold is a really good example. I think another one, if you wanted a combat example, would be a Don Carnage, as long as we're sticking to the Disney afternoon, because he consistently threatens, Cape Suzette. If I'm remembering the name of their city correctly, thank you.
You are.
Awesome. But he's not actually dangerous.
No, he's someone that might ruin a delivery run, or he might steal a MacGuffin from you.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, his pirates are not like city-threatening menaces.
Except for Will.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're definitely going to fire at Will, his first mate.
Yeah, so Will is always in actual danger and should really choose Don Carnage as an actual nemesis.
Yes.
As opposed to a comedic one. Fair enough. All right. Anything else? Or do you want to start answering some questions? We have a log of questions to get through.
Oh, yeah. We've got a ton of questions, so, you know, I'll put that aside. If you've got some more to say, we've still got that thread going on the SystemMasteryPodcast.com for the 7th C discussion. If you've got anything to say, jump on there, let us know, or let us know for the afterthought comments here.
Yeah, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, either way.
Or don't.
I don't know.
Yeah, shut up, maybe.
I'm not your dad. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah. Trust me, after some of these questions, I feel like we're going to have a really full comment thread anyway. I feel like we're going to be all, speaking of which, let's get started. First questions come to us from Some Old Geek Lost in Oregon, and he writes, "Dear Jay and Other Jay, after hours of listening to you two, I'm not sure why people think you sound the same. There are some very clear differences in your voices. Jay, the co-hostess with the mostest, sounds like he's wearing a fedora, and Jay, the co-host that says that one catchphrase, you know the one, sounds like he took diction classes." I'm sure everyone listening will now be all cleared up on who's talking. On to questions.
Yeah.
I'm glad he was very unclear on that, and we have no idea who he was talking about. I did take diction classes.
And you are wearing a fedora.
I've never worn a fedora.
Oh, dude, you have more fedoras than I know.
Actually, that is true. I do own 4 fedoras.
That's true.
I am not lying here. I do own 4 fedoras because they were in the basement of a museum I used to work at, in a huge bag with hundreds of other fedoras, and I took 4 so I could give them to people as jokes. And no one wanted them, so they're just sitting there in my closet.
Of course no one wanted them. No,
they don't fit me because I have an unusually huge head.
Yeah, you're a big fat head.
I'm a big fat head. My head's actually kind of thin. It's just the bone structure of my head is enormous. Nothing fits up there.
Hooray.
So, anyway, moving on from whether or not I wear fedoras. I don't wear any hats. I'm going to cherry pick some of your questions because you actually have quite a few here, but let's get right started. Should Google's self-driving cars be allowed on roads? Should they be used to replace all cab drivers? And I'll go ahead and say, I don't mind them replacing cab drivers, but I am curious how they're going to fit into the driver's seat of other cars.
Jokes.
Ah, these are the jokes. What do you think? What do you think about Google self-driving cars, John?
I think it's wonderful. I'd love it. When I was a kid, there was this this article I had read about doing a entire street where instead of the car itself being like self-driven, it was there were sensors on the road that were driving the car. And this was when I was like 12 or something. And I went, that's the best idea. I want to be able to get into a car and have it go somewhere and fall asleep and wake up and be there. That's the best.
Every idea you have is the same idea that like Baron Harkonnen would have.
It's true.
What could I do?
I had this idea and it was, I want to be able to have this thing that I normally have to do take care of itself while I sleep and then wake up. It's the self-washing laundry.
Wait until you hear his ideas on sex.
Oh, man. Also, am I super happy to be living in the days of Amazon Prime Now?
Oh, right.
I don't even need to go to the grocery store anymore.
Yeah, now that they have that pantry version where you can just
I'm like, hey, what is this? $10 for a gallon of milk? That seems fair. Oh, go ahead and bring that to me.
I like going to the grocery store. But then again, that's because between the two of us, I'm the cook.
Yeah, and I'm just grabbing whatever seems like I can shove that in my face at that moment.
What requires the least amount of food cooking time?
What is that, a Pop-Tart? Great, put it in the cart.
I can do that. There's that really good Patton Oswalt bit about that, where he is looking at the lean cuisines, and he picks one, and you have to microwave it twice, and so he passes. He's like, no, not two steps.
Why I always get that Goober's peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, that's so awful. I mean, because you're not supposed to keep peanut butter in the fridge, and you have to keep jelly in the fridge.
That's
nonsense.
But look, man, I ain't got the time to open up several jars using a couple of knives, spoons.
I just can't go with you on that one, man. I just can't.
Nah, dude. I'm just going to scoop it right out from the jar into my mouth.
All right. Well, we're gonna skip around through your questions here. What is the most overused trope in horror movies, John?
The most overused trope is definitely the mirror scare.
Okay.
Which is you look in a mirror, you open the mirror to get something out of it, you close the mirror, and there's something behind you.
Absolutely. That's a really overused
one. That get used all the time. And of course, people who make horror movies know that it's an overused trope, which means they'll do a lot of fake-out ones where someone will do the look in a mirror, open it, close it, and then there'll be like a screeching sound, but nothing's there. But then they turn around and something's there.
Yeah, mine's just going to be screeching sounds that don't signify anything.
Oh, yeah. The jump scare where there is nothing, also known as a bus.
Is that really? That's the name for that? The bus?
The old, I think it's 1940s, The Cat People. It was the first time you had a jump scare where nothing actually came out. But what happened was she was running away from essentially a werepanther, and she went around a corner, and then a bus came around, and it did the whole tsh bus noise.
The steam, the hydraulic venting.
So you got that first time in a horror movie where you got a jump scare that was all audio and no actual monster. So it just sort of, there's a term that's called a bus for that.
Okay, I get that. Although I probably would have said that the very first jump scare was in Citizen Kane.
Oh,
remember that? Have you ever seen Citizen Kane all the
way
through? I
have. I actually really like Citizen Kane.
Okay, but do you like the one part where there's a cockatoo on screen for like 1 second for no reason? And it just goes, and that's the end of the cockatoo? Because that to me is like the ultimate jump scare. And as far as I understand, it's in there just to make sure that people aren't falling asleep in the theaters.
Lol.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
There's a scene transition with a fucking bird. And I always was like, that's got to be the first jump scare.
Lol.
In the wrong kind of movie.
Yeah, not really a jump scare so much as a, hey, everyone.
Hey, wake up. Hey.
Whoa there. Hey.
It's the Kevin Nealon short attention span theater thing.
Yeah.
Where he's got the whistles and he's clapping.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Let's see. Do I have anything else? Okay, yeah. Lastly, best. And there's a lot more good questions from him, so I'll save the rest and ask him later. Lastly, best and worst ever character names used in a game you played, PC or NPC? All right, do we want to talk about an NPC? Because I think there's an NPC that we can both agree.
I'm pretty sure I'm on the same page as you. We have not discussed this ahead of time.
I think maybe we should go
ahead.
Okay,
hold on. On three.
One, two, three.
Stryker McGonagall.
Yes! Oh, there it is. Fist bump. Stryker McGonagall is an NPC that we forced one of our friends to run.
Oh man!
In a long running D&D fourth edition game we did,
and he just showed up random other places.
Well, because we kept improvising him into scenes. Anytime there was town guards, we'd declare that one of them was Stryker McGonagall.
Yes, one of the town guard, where all of them are like running around in their breastplate and a pike, and then one of them has a like 5 o'clock shadow and a cigarette dangling out of his mouth, and he's like, "I'm too old for this shit." And that's Stryker McGonagall.
Now, at first, I think he just needed one of the guards to be slightly more heroic and badass for one story. And so he was like, there's this one guard, he's got a name, I guess, and his name is, guys, help me out here, what's the name? And I don't remember who the hell said it, but right away someone went Stryker McGonagall. And from that day forward, he was just like the Mel Gibson of the D&D universe. He was constantly destroying 8 medieval cars and like having to turn in his sword and helmet over.
You blew up 4 carts!
Yeah. And it was just a regular running joke that anytime any group of guards showed up, we'd ask which one was Stryker.
Yeah, well, eventually it became the point where Stryker McGonagall was off having his own adventures.
Yeah, and we were just narrating, because he would be like, no, Stryker's not here. Stryker is not in this list of guards, you guys.
Stryker is currently fighting a cobalt drug smuggling ring.
Yeah, and then we just narrate that instead. Meanwhile, wherever Stryker McGonagall is...
I've got you, you damn kobold.
I have diplomatic immunity.
It's been revoked.
Yeah. Oh, Stryker.
That's Stryker McGonagall. So that's the greatest NPC dumb name. PC dumb names. I played a Titan Cyber Knight in a Rifts game for like 8 years solid named Dahmer. Because I started playing this when I was 13. So I was like, yeah, I'll name him after a serial killer I am aware of.
Nice. Good job, Edgelord.
And then I just, yeah, Edgelord, 13. You have to be.
Oh, no.
And then, but I was like 21. I was like, can I change this character's name, please? Anyone?
Anyone? Bueller?
Help me out here. I don't want to play as Dahmer anymore.
That's okay. I had a guy whose name was Xavier Charleston.
Yeah, we've talked about both of these characters before, yeah. God damn. So, yeah, we both played really embarrassing characters, but it's good that the Stryker McGonagall story came out.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. Thank you very much, Some Old Geek Lost in Oregon. Next questions come to us from Time Traveling Bigfoot, and he asks, what's the best campaign you ever played in, and what made it special?
Okay.
Well, it was probably Stryker McGonagall that made that campaign so special.
Probably.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the campaign I'd go with. Why don't you go first?
Let's see. I'm going to go with... I want to say probably the long-running... Went from AD&D to 3rd edition D&D game we had.
Ooh.
Because that one spanned a while. And then turning your characters from AD&D to a 3rd ed character was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because my character was goddamn useless at anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a mage cleric, which means he didn't have max levels of wizardry or cleric abilities. So he was just like, everyone else is running around as level 10. He's a level 5/5.
Yeah, there's a point where you think, like, when you're first learning how to play D&D and you see that mage cleric and you're like, I could cast all the spells. That's a good choice. And then you realize pretty quick that no, it isn't.
Oh, no. The only reason he survived anything was because I was very clever at using low-level spells to do dumb bullshit.
Well, to be fair, most low-level mage spells are really goddamn good at keeping you alive, if nothing else. You've got your invisibility and flight. You could cast both of those by 5th level.
Yeah, no, he was... definitely one of those characters that I'm like, yeah, you're only alive because the person playing you is smart enough and able to convince the GM that what I just did was able to be done.
Yeah.
So being like, oh, there's a horde of zombies. I cast Create Water over them in a giant, like, cube. It splashes all of them, and then I cast Bless on the water and create Holy Water, and then they all burn.
Right.
It's one of those things where I'm like, oh, yeah, here are low-level spells, and I'm mostly using them in a creative way, but I never get to do it more than once.
And technically, every way you use them, you're not allowed to. I mean, I got in trouble once because someone found a rule that said I wasn't allowed to place Tensor's floating disk under a bridge and then cut all the other supports out of the bridge and then wait. It turns out that you're not allowed to just use first-level carrying stuff spells to murder people.
Turns out...
Oh, well. I mean, I tried.
Yeah.
So, okay.
No, that's the thing. And that campaign was great just because it spanned a giant mythology that we've mentioned on the show. Our good friend Jake came up with a ton of shit for this world.
Nice.
So, yeah.
I'd probably go with an Exalted campaign that you and I were both in for quite a long time with a bunch of different characters, and that campaign just kept going.
Yep.
It was our friend Brian's, what he called his Barony campaign, which was set in a part of Exalted, which is not on the maps, because that's the best thing about Exalted, is the map's too big to bother with.
Yeah.
So it was his own world he had put together with a bunch of like small cities and slightly larger cities and
a bunch of baronies.
Baronies and intrigue and interesting incursions from abyssals and all kinds of cool stuff going on. A lot of kind of a haunted Innistrad slash Ravenloft sort of vibe to a lot of it. Big ghost wolves roaming in the mist in the distance. And it was really neat.
Yeah.
I liked all the characters in it. Everyone came up with just really good stuff to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good campaign. I really enjoyed it. All right. Let's see. Your future self travels back in time to hang out with you. They aren't here to impart lasting wisdom or help you game the stock market. They are just here to have fun and hang out, maybe watch TV or something. After a day spent having a blast with your temporal clone self, they ask if you'd like to hook up. So my question to you, gentlemen, is, would you sleep with your time travel future self?
Well, I mean, I'd have to ask him, well, do I?
Oh, do I? Yeah, because he'd know.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I don't know if he might be lying, you know? What if he's like, well, if I just tell him that we did...
Yeah, but then he would get fragged because if I had sex with him when I didn't have sex with him the first time, then he would be all like, oh, yeah, that's so good. I'm fragging.
Now, I'd feel more inclined if I was the one.
Also, that's what I yell out when I have an orgasm. Yeah. I'm fragging. Oh,
man, you should stop eating so many Doritos if they're coming out your urethra, man. All right. I feel like I've been on a downward slope body-wise for forever that is not stopping, so I would be way more inclined to say yes to this if I was the one going back in time to sleep with my past self.
Lol.
My past self is hot. This is a whole mess right here, and it's only
going
to get worse.
What I got going on right here,
yeah,
no good.
Jeff-wise. So, no, if I was the originator of the time travel, then sure, but otherwise, no, I'm good.
No.
There you go. All right. And last question from Time Traveling Bigfoot. If you could steal any priceless artifact, monument, or treasure in the world, regardless of time, place, or size, what would you steal, and how would you go about fencing it?
All right. Well, I'm going to steal the Eiffel Tower.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter what size it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take that. I'm going to sell it to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can have the actual one instead of just a replica.
Fair enough. Good choice. All right.
There you go.
Let's see. I am going to steal... I really want to choose something for this that, you know, famously disappeared. So
Amelia Earhart's plane?
Yeah, the Lockheed Vega that Amelia Earhart was flying when she disappeared.
There you go.
Boom, I know what kind of plane it was.
Good job. You knew about a plane? Shocking.
I did. Crazy, right?
Oh, no, hold on. I want to change my answer.
Fire away.
The thing I'm actually going to steal is the entire city of Kandor. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it in a bottle.
Yeah, a little bottle. Yeah, of course. God damn it. Let's see. I think I will pick the Colossus of Rhodes.
Ooh.
Which was a major statue in one of the original Eight Wonders of the World, which vanished completely and without a trace. It's one of the ones that there's the least evidence of it actually even existing. It was supposed to be a 100-foot-tall statue that stretched between two major points at a port.
Yep.
I'd like to know that it existed and then steal it. And how would I go about fencing it? I would not. I would say it's actually a statue of me and be like, look at that. Who else has a 100-foot fucking statue? You don't know.
You can't tell.
Yeah. So there you go. The Colossus of Rhodes. That's my answer. Or maybe the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. One of those.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Time Traveling Bigfoot. Let's go forward. Here we go, from Lawrence Sneakers and Jeans Macintosh.
Good.
Hey, you, take those sneakers off. All right, first thing, long-time listener, first-time caller. Love the podcast, fellows. If you had an animal's head for your head, scaled to fit, what would you pick? Well, now that's an interesting question, what would you pick? Because it doesn't actually say which animal type would you want for your head, it just says, what would you pick?
Yeah.
So I'm leaving it open to you, John. You can play fair.
My nose. Ha ha. Dad jokes.
pedantry. You got a real answer here?
Okay. I'm going to go with...
I already know this one for me. It's easy. You want me to go?
Yeah.
Elephant. I'm going to go with elephant because that way I get an extra whole prehensile kind of appendage I can use. And plus some rad tusks for stuff.
Sweet.
I mean, I could probably store like bagels on the ends of those. Well, you know, what do you need to do, right? I could sharpen them and use them to like pop open cans. And plus, I get a trunk to do all kinds of shit. I could breathe underwater. I mean, honestly, an elephant's head is just so useful.
Right.
So I have giant ears I can use to keep myself cool and hot on a hot day.
Yeah.
I could throw dirt on my head and everyone would think that is normal as opposed to what they think now, which is that it is merely adding dirt to more dirt. So there you go. Elephant. John?
All right. I'm going with crocodile.
Ooh, good choice. Another tool kit of a head.
Yeah. It's super useful. Also, I always get my Halloween costume. I'm just going to go as one of the Egyptian gods.
Sobek every year.
Every year. I'm Sobek.
Yeah. And I can be Ganesh. And together, we can be very offensive.
Finally. I always wanted to be very offensive.
Finally offend myself.
That's what I've been doing with my body all of these years, is making it more and more offensive. And now, finally, I will reach the peak.
Just get that heart plug installed, Baron. All right. And also, if you could say one word and everything of that word would vanish from the earth forever, what would you say? Neat. pedantry. No, okay, I'm sorry.
Coils?
Let's just say you can eliminate... You can eliminate...
No springs!
Yeah, springs. Just eliminate springs. Fuck them.
Fuck springs.
All right, let's say you can eliminate...
Inclined planes.
Just ruining the simple machines for everyone, huh? That's your...
Screws.
No wheels.
Oh, that'd be great. Just fuck everyone over.
Fire. No, but let's say it's just a word. If you could eliminate a word from the vernacular.
Oh, it's not... actually the thing.
I feel like everything of that word doesn't mean that everything that word defines, but rather like every version of that word.
Oh, see, now I was thinking it made that thing disappear.
Like you could actually eliminate a thing.
Like,
all right.
I say a word and then everything that is that word disappears. So if I say planet, there's no more planets.
Okay. That seems like it's going to have a lot of nasty repercussions.
Well, no, because what I'm going to say is hate.
Ooh, look at
you.
Oh,
fuck you!
Shit, did I just wake up in a Coke commercial?
I'd like to teach the world to drink.
God damn. Let's see. If I was to be able to eliminate any given thing from the earth based on a word for it, emissions. They're never good.
Emissions.
Any emissions at all. I mean, except for like necessary emissions. I mean,
think
about nocturnal emissions. No more of that. You're doing good there. That's good for your sheets.
Yeah.
No more fossil fuel emissions. You got all kinds of stuff. Emissions are just generally bad.
Yeah. No one wants to emit anything like radiation.
Yeah. No.
Radio waves.
Yeah. Light. Heat.
Yep. There we go.
Cold, uncaring, absolute zero universe. That's what I'd like.
Finally, we've stopped entropy.
Perfect. We figured it out. All right. Great show, thanks, from Lawrence Sneakers and Jeans, Macintosh. Next question comes to us from a skeleton.
Ah!
Oh, a spooky skeleton.
Spooky, scary skeleton.
Maybe we should cut to a clip. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul and seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek. Anyway, he says, so I finally have a chance to run my favorite setting ever, Dark Sun. I am pretty pumped for it, and you two have convinced me of the superiority of 4th edition. I'm going to be using that. My question is, what are your experiences with Dark Sun, in general, or just the 4th edition version? Do you have any advice for Dark Sun specifically 4th edition, like the tax feats and Monster Manual 3 you already suggested for 4E? From a skeleton.
Well, the nice thing is, in Dark Sun... they fixed a lot of little issues.
Yeah.
One of the things was, there's always in any version of D&D, the item treadmill, mm-hmm. where you're constantly needing to replace your weapon from a plus one to a plus two, or mm-hmm. your armor from a plus two to a plus three, and so on.
It leads to these sub-problems where, like, a sword plus two is more valuable than an on-fire sword plus one, even though an on-fire sword plus one is way cooler.
And it also leads to the point where you're like, oh, yeah, early on, one of the adventures... we went on this huge quest, and I found the sword of this ancient ancestor I had, who was the greatest paladin who ever lived, and it's a plus two longsword. And then I found, in a just treasure hoard of some random monster, a plus three longsword, and went, well, fuck this relic.
Right. So one of the first things that 4th edition Dark Sun does in the Dark Sun campaign guide is fix that and give you what's called
It's just you get scaling boosts without needing to worry about whether or not you have a magic item.
God, I can't believe that name is slipping out of my head, but they have a term for it where it's that your character is getting better at the equivalent rate of what the magic item treadmill would have done for you.
Yeah, so instead of going, well, I need to have a better cloak slot because that gives me saves, and I need to have a better armor slot because that gives me the AC, and so on, you just, at the breakpoints you normally would have gotten those items, you just get a plus one in all of them.
Yeah, and what they do to replace the items is what they call boons, which are like temporary bonuses that you can apply to things. It was really cool. It was a neat thing. It'd be like blessings from gods or interesting pieces of like consumable material you found that you
worked
could use
a lot
up.
Like the Gamma World, like mutations and tech, where
yes.
It's just here's a little thing you have a one shot of doing.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to run the treadmill and get gear and gear up forever, you're like, oh, I'm going to always be competent, and then I'll randomly have little things. And it doesn't even need to be a physical thing. It could be you feel so good about yourself after having saved this person from a rampaging monster that the next time there's a fear check, you're at, like, plus five to the fear check because you're not afraid of monsters right now.
Yeah. 4th edition Dark Sun also introduced something called themes, and those were really cool. Those were basically minor changes that were universal but could be applied to any class, and they replaced a couple of your, like, at-will or encounter powers and so on with stuff that had to do with the theme. So, like, there, for example, eventually Dragon Magazine had one that was, like, the werewolf pack theme where you remove a few of your powers and replace them with cool werewolf powers. So you can be a werewolf bard or a werewolf barbarian, and you have a similarity with the other werewolf, but you're still a bard or a barbarian. You can really feel that. And That was kind of cool. So that's in there. I would say advice, embrace the weirdness.
I was going to say advice, play a Thrycreen if at all possible.
Exactly where I was going. Embrace the weirdness, because we were asking if we've had experience with playing Dark Sun. I've only played it a little bit and never in 4th edition. And the DM I was running under would not allow weird characters. So it was like, oh, you can play as humans and half-dwarves and have fun, kids. Because he thought well, he's right that the bio-shaping halflings are stupid and the giant green elves are kind of weird. But he wouldn't allow Thrycreen. He thought they were too crazy and weird and that forearms would be overpowered. Granted, it was 2nd edition. That might well have been true.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing about Dark Sun is it's a weird world where weird monsters are running around and you can play as crazy shit. Embrace it. Let it happen. And
yeah, man. Do some John Carter.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry too much about the Preserver and Defiler mechanics. Just have fun. Get out there and embrace the weirdness. Go after that whole kind of exactly that John Carter, Barsoom sort of feel where it's a fallen world that still has people fighting over the scraps.
Yeah, just have a ton of fun in a weird, very unique setting for D&D.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorites. All right. Thank you very much, Skeleton. Next question comes to us from Alaran612, and he says, I've been going back and re-listening to old episodes. I'm getting through Afterthought 5, and it seems your main trouble with steampunk is almost semantic. That adventure set in Victorian Age Europe or the Wild West with some sci-fi fantasy elements shouldn't get that label if they don't have anything to do with rebellion. It's close. I think that the time, I mean, keep in mind you're talking to like 6 or 7 months ago, Jeff and John. So longer than that, more than a year ago, Jeff and John here. So I'm not sure if we haven't adapted our positions on this. I guess I see your point, but language can change, and the punk moniker seems to have been appropriated as a label for adventures set in any era with what you could call era-appropriate science fiction elements. So things like diesel punk and deco punk. The question is there a better name for this kind of thing? A name that would encompass both true steampunk that involves rebellion, but also the kind of fun shenanigans you get in Wild Wild West and Vanishing Point style stories, where you have the retro sci-fi and alternate history elements, but not the rebellious ones.
Pulp is the word you are looking for.
Yep, that's right. It's pulp.
So if you want diesel pulp or steam pulp, that gives you, like, just swashbuckling adventures, and I'm going to fight these guys with my steam-powered laser gun. Whatever. That's fine. You can do that. And then instead of it being about the punk aspect, the rebellion, the class system, and how things are not balanced, which is what you have in so many of these punk settings, you just go with the pulp adventure, and if you have steam pulp or diesel pulp, at that point it's just fun adventures with weird era-appropriate tech.
Yeah, it's like what Dick Tracy was with, like, you know, imagine how lame the things that made Dick Tracy pulp are now, like a watch that you can use as a phone.
Oh goodness,
right?
That's,
oh my
crazy.
God, thank God someone fixed that. Like, that's the sort of thing where that's pulp for the era, because, you know, in the 1930s that's super cool.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So anyway, I would say a lot of this for me isn't necessarily the difference between punk and pulp, but rather just the current connotation of steampunk has become so viscerally unpleasant to me because of the way people use it. I mean, to me, I hear steampunk now, and I'm not like, oh, I could totally have a cool Victorian-era adventure. I think a brown goth with a gear on his hat is going to talk to me about plasma or airships. And I'm like, I don't want to talk to that guy. He's the worst.
Lol.
He's got a ponytail, and he should not. Looks like he dipped it in the fryer at KFC.
And he did.
Gah. So that's the problem is that the steampunk award has begun to encompass a kind of like a fashion-y sort of a movement sort of thing, like
well, yeah,
sort of
that's,
a clique,
that's
a clique, and I don't care.
That's a lot of it is it's yeah. being more fashion than idea of story.
Yeah.
So that at least I can understand. Like if someone says I'm dressing steampunk, I go, all right, well, sure, whatever. But what it means is if you're dressing steampunk and you're all in like Victorian finery with gears all over you, you're dressing as the villains.
Yeah, you're the bad guy.
You're the bad guy in a steampunk book.
Yeah. So, okay. Next question from the same fella here. Superheroes, who would you do?
Who would I do?
Which superhero would you want to do?
Obviously Mystique, because it's all of them.
Oh, because you just get the whole package?
Yeah, you're just like, turn into whoever, I don't care.
All right, well, I guess.
What do I want to do?
Although, you know it's Mystique, though.
Yeah, I do, but...
See, I want the same thing, but I want
it's
a little
like getting
more,
the girlfriend experience.
I guess that's true. I'm going to go with similar, but with a little more of a sense of humor to it, so I'm going to take Morph.
You know, that was the second thing I had in mind.
Because that way you're going to get messed with while you're having sex. You're like, yeah, take that, Jean Grey. And he's going to turn around and be his weird, gross white head. And he's going to say something in like a Groucho Marx voice at you.
Oh, yeah. He'll just be having sex with someone. And then he's going to be like, ah, now I'm Wolverine. You're like, oh, what the hell's going
God
on
damn
here?
It, man. Yeah, I feel like, well, you know, just to try and stay true to my like bisexual gamer roots, I might pick Deadpool here. Just because Deadpool is like becoming more well-known for being a pansexual hero.
Yeah, but he's also real ugly.
Yeah, so am I. Whatever. I feel like I could get him.
You could get in that spandex.
Deadpool's in my league is what I'm trying to go for here.
Lol.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. And, oh, bonus round, supervillains.
Oh, what? Oh, I already did a supervillain. Okay.
All
so,
right,
supervillain was Mystique. Now I have to go to a hero.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. If I had to pick a hero, who do I do? Let's go with... one of the versions of Brainiac.
Ooh, weird, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to finally hump a computer.
He's going to assimilate you real bad, you know, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to stick my dick in there, and then it's going to turn into a little robo-dick, and it's going to be great.
Oof.
And then a little robot dog comes out and bites my robo-dick.
let's see, I have to pick a villain, because I actually did pick a hero for my first round.
Yep.
Okay, I am digging my way through the Batman canon. Let's see, who's he got that's a villain that I wouldn't mind sleeping with?
Penguin.
Yeah, it depends on which Penguin. We're not talking like Danny DeVito. Like,
no, we're talking.
Black
we're talking
stuff.
The like Gotham Penguin,
like the Gotham, like the video game Penguin.
No, like the show Gotham.
Oh, Robin Lord Taylor, and he's just sort of an effete weirdo.
Yeah, that seems like it'd be right up your alley.
Yeah, I could go. I could also go for the Riddler from that show, I guess, just to shut him up.
Lol.
God, he's annoying. Oh, guys, I have a weird joke puzzle thing. I work in the forensics department. Shut up. Just I hate that show.
Yes, you and everyone else, and yet it gets renewed.
I know, it's killing me. Oh, it's the worst. Anyway, okay, so there you go. Thanks for your attention. Thanks again for helping me get through all my days over the past year. You're welcome. Next question from Blake S., who asks, something that we consider in my studies is using games as training opportunities for emergency services. Essentially, role-play a response. Have you guys ever considered this aspect of role-playing? Well, I actually am also I'm a CPR first aid instructor, so yes, I have also done this.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of jobs that use the role-playing thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, granted, it's not really necessarily our wheelhouse for what we do around here.
Well, it's a big thing in sales.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they do things in sales, is you're like, okay, sales manager is going to come to you and go, all right, pretend that I'm like an old lady and I want to get a printer. Sell me a printer. And then you do the whole role-play, and then at the end he goes, all right, here's the things you missed, here's what you didn't talk about, here's what you did good, and that's how they use that.
Yeah, and the weird thing is every time they're doing it, it's like, all right, you have to sell this lady a printer, and you're like, oh no, Abraham Lincoln!
And I'm like, whoa, I can't see that old lady behind this huge hat! All right, now let's try to sell that old lady a printer again, but this time it's a horror movie.
The Wild Wild West.
All right, this time your hair's on fire, go!
Ah, my hair's on fire.
Would you like a printer? Oh.
All right. Let's see. Moving on.
God, improvers are almost as bad as the British.
I like improv. One of these days, you and I should go actually do an improv class, given that we have the rapport going already.
Yeah, we should go in there, do an improv class, and then always do no to everything.
Oh,
just
dude, just
never
nothing
yes
but
and.
No but. Just every time. Like, hey, welcome to the store. Do you have any interest in this fine cheese? No, but I have a gun.
Hey, I'm Mike Tyson. No, you're not. I am.
Yeah. I'm Mike Tyson. Screw you. Also, Mike Tyson has a British accent.
Oi.
All right. Coming to us from Connor, the wizard who knows where you are and why you are here.
Oh, no.
Crap. John has stated that he is a fan of sliders. I have often thought of running a game with that concept. So of the games you have reviewed or played, which systems would you use if you were going to run a game in sliders?
Well, the easiest one to do it that makes sense thematically is rifts, because you can just jump through a rift and go to another world.
Yeah.
But that game also not great for the sliders feel, like the themes of it, as far as the characters aren't badass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just dudes.
Yeah.
You have like a real smart guy and then a guy who's fairly charismatic, and then that's about it.
Yeah.
So with that, I'd say probably doing something in a much lower key setting. Like, you could do, God, I don't want to say any of the generic ones, but like, it would be easy enough to do that because you could set point values fairly
low.
Yeah,
you could do it in Fate without any difficulty, or GURPS without too much trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also feel like you could probably, one of my favorite games to recommend people for retooling, because building characters is so simple, is Gamma World. The 7th edition Gamma World is so easy to retool into a playable thing. The other day, in our Facebook, I was talking to one of our listeners and just rebuilding Gamma World into the Steven Universe game.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. All you need to do is assign all the job classes to either be gems or things that people do. So, warrior, gem type, scout, another gem type. And then when you roll them, you get the combination, you have your character. So I feel like that'd be a really easy thing to do, because you only need to build 6 things. Each class has 3 powers and 3 bonuses, and you're done. So if you can be like, all right, what's the scientist in sliders all about? He has these 3 things, and he has these 3 bonuses.
Law.
Not that difficult to do. So no. That'd be my recommendation. But what do I know? That question was for you.
Oh, yeah. So for me, that's it. Mostly, more than the system, what you need to get down is the sense of urgency, which was the greatest thing they did in sliders, because they had the timer. That, as a MacGuffin, is one of the best ways the show created tension.
Oh, how about Dread, then?
Oh, yeah, you could do that in Dread, and every time you pull a thing, there's just a chance that you lose the timer, or get to go through the portal.
If the tower falls, then the portal closes. So you have to complete all of your objectives without breaking the tower to get out.
Lol.
And, you know, I'm sure that they got stuck. I've never seen sliders, but I assume they get stuck on dimensions from time to time and have to wait for another chance.
No, not really, because the whole thing is, if they missed their window, most of the time they're like, oh, yeah, if we miss this window, the next one's in, like, 10,000 years.
Oh, okay. All right, then. All right. So next question. Which children's show do you think would make the best gritty reboot, excluding superhero properties?
Okay. So no superheroes. We're also going to take off anything that could be construed as superheroes. So no Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, no G.I. Joe, nothing like that.
Yeah, I would say that G.I. Joe are straight up superheroes and not just a military show. They don't really match any kind of military description.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the military doesn't have a guy whose superpower is dialing phones and is named Dial Tone as a result, where G.I. Joe does have that.
Oh, my God. But just imagine if they did.
Yeah. If that was your job in the military. I'm an M4. I dial phones.
Oh, sweet.
Guys, you know what? Of the military guys I've known, that's not that difficult. One of my buddies in high school was, because when you're 18 in San Diego, all of your friends are in the military and they're 19. But his job was to fix seat belts on ejector seats. That's all. He did was change the seat belts out for new seat belts.
Yeah, that's a super fun job, I imagine.
I assume so. That's probably why he was dating high school girls all the time, to take the edge off.
Aw.
Right?
Aw.
Okay, moving on. Okay, so, gritty reboots.
Gritty reboots of cartoons. Let's go ahead and... Oh, no, that's also kind of superhero-ish. Damn it. Every time I think of one, it's basically just superheroes. Because I was going to say Mummy's Alive.
Oh, fucking Mummy's Alive. God damn.
I was gonna do real gritty, dark mummies. But no, they're basically superheroes as well.
I'm going to go with Snorks.
Oh, gooden.
Yeah, the Snorks are not superheroes to begin with. They are forgotten enough that I feel like you could probably get it done without having them compared to, you know, the Smurf movies have become these CGI nightmares.
Yeah.
So the Snorks, we could rebuild them as, like, folklore creatures that, you know, heads that are just mostly teeth. And they live in the water. And
well, yeah, you just change their little snork thing into the little anglerfish light.
Ooh, yeah, there you go. See? What's in the darkness? Snorks. Come and die with the snorks. Swim and die with the snorks.
I'm going to go with the old D&D cartoon and just make it straight up like an actual gritty D&D.
They should make the world a gritty D&D, but keep the dumb kids and their stupid pet unicorn like exactly the same.
Exactly the same,
yeah.
But now they are straight up murder hobos.
No, no. I like it better that they all die by the end of the first episode.
No, I want them to be murder hobos.
Okay,
that's what I want.
That's your thing. You get to pick it.
Yeah, I want the D&D world they're in to be as lighthearted and fun as it was. And then they're just straight up murdering everyone they see.
Because that D&D show was mostly just a bunch of dumb kids saying stupid kid things at each other. And the vast majority of them really didn't do anything that had anything to do with their class.
No.
Guys.
You're like, I'm a barbarian. What does that mean? I ran at things and bumped them with my head.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Oh, for the love of God, that show. Okay. Moving on. Thank you, Connor. Next question comes to us from the Blue Bogle. Very similar question. We're going to stay on kids' television here, John. What made-for-kids property fueled your nightmares as children or terrifies you now as adults despite its kiddie veneer?
Nothing.
You don't have this problem?
No, there was nothing that was aimed at children that I was particularly scared of.
I feel like it's got to be stuff that just gave you the heebie-jeebies or was gross in some way.
Oh, okay. Nothing generically, but specifically, there was an episode of Punky Brewster that creeped me out because it was an episode where they go into this cave and it ends up being just a dream sequence thing at the end, but it's like there's this weird cave demon thing that starts possessing all of her friends.
Yeah.
And so when they turn around, they'd have, like, these glowing green eyes.
I'm picturing this as the live-action Punky Brewster. And not
yes, it is.
It
the live-action
oh, wow.
Punky
okay,
Brewster.
That's even worse.
Yes.
All right.
And that's what it was, and that freaked me out for some reason.
Because I feel like Cave Demon is something that you'd see on the cartoon Punky Brewster more likely than on the live-action one.
Nope. Live-action
right.
Punky Brewster. Soleil Moonfry.
Wow. Okay, I am also going to pick a specific episode. It's an episode of Fraggle Rock.
Okay.
There's a single episode of that where, I can't remember exactly which Fraggle, I think it's either Mokey or Red, meets a little creature that kind of looks like a rabbit, kind of looks like a dog. You can actually see the same puppet in Muppet Treasure Island. It's one of the pirates. And it's basically a little depressed creature that can't be left alone. Like, it gets sad if it's left alone. But it has the power to force you to hang around with it by singing a sad song about how it's feeling lonely. And it has creepy eyes and a creepy look to it. And it's such a kind of invasive and aggressive thing that it's doing, is basically forcing this Fraggle to hang around with it all the time and not go back to its friends. And it's like, oh, you're going to live with me forever, that kind of stuff. It's not as scary now, but when I was a little kid, that scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, now I know why it scared the crap out of me, because that's a very kind of like a sexual assault sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I had another one. There was this is going to sound real weird. There was an episode of Gidget.
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
Where it was the same sort of thing where, like,
when did you get older than me?
Hey, man, just go with it. So this episode had this weird Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing as well, where, like, every time she'd turn around, someone would be, like, replaced, but you'd know they were replaced because they had these, like, weird dark circles around their eyes, and it was almost zombie-ish, but not quite. And I don't know why, as a kid, the idea of the people I know being replaced was super freaky to me.
Fucking Gidget. You know, I also was really really afraid of one particular episode of The Misadventures of Dobie Gillis.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, I also had a bunch of fear of Gunsmoke.
Yeah, there was this great episode of I Love Lucy.
There you go.
Bonanza.
My Three Sons. The Patty Duke Show. Prairie Home Companion used to terrify me into nightmares as a child.
Still terrifies me into nightmares.
All right, thank you, Blue Bogle. Next question comes to us from Dylan, and Dylan asks, and this is a long one, so I'm just going to read through it. Here we go. Dear System Mastery, I have a hypothetical scenario for you. You and John walk into your local grocery store after an enjoyable meal at your local Cheese Dudes restaurant. You go to the checkout counter and wait in line to purchase the Snickers you have in your hand. You start to read the latest in gossip and diet fads in the tabloids to pass the time, and your eyes come across a familiar set of words. You quickly grab the magazine off the rack and realize you are looking at a copy of Food Fight, the action-adventure RPG. You look at John to see... Oh, I guess this is me, actually. Okay. Yeah. You look at John to see if he has noticed what treasure you have found. He looks at the cover and says, "Why do I care about Charlie Sheen doing coke at a Cheese Dude's?" You look back to the magazine in your hand and realize he is right. The cover that you thought you had seen was gone and replaced with a picture of Charlie Sheen in handcuffs leaving the restaurant. You don't get arrested for doing coke at Cheese Dude's.
No, it was... He brought it in with him. There's no outside coke allowed.
You gotta buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also you have to count on the fact that the people who work there are getting high on their own supply. All right, you purchase your candy and make your way home, thinking about what it would have been like if you had found an RPG for Food Fight. My question is this: what if you had actually found a copy of Food Fight, the action-adventure RPG? What would that be like? What would be some of the mechanics to the system? How would the transition to the real world and the food world work? What other problems would need to be addressed to fix any issues? Thank you. Okay, what would an actual Food Fight... Oh, first of all, it would be a supplement for one of those Universal Game Engines, because there's no way it gets its own proprietary.
No.
So it'd be GURPS Food Fight.
Lol. You'd have a bunch of points that you could put into things,
things,
a bunch of skills.
You'd have a variable background point purchase that controls your ability to, or your connection to the food from which you are based.
I was going
to
say, your variable background is how popular is your food. On a one, you don't have a lot of pull in the universe. You don't have a lot of clout. At a five, you are super well known. You're one of the top brands. You would be like the Coca-Cola of your store.
Right. But I also want one that controls how much access to your character's sort of back, like, food connection you have power from.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for example, Dex Dog Detective has no Dex Dog Detective cereal.
Yeah, he's
powers.
A five in known brand, but a zero in his food-based power.
Yes. So, although I don't feel like anyone in that movie really used any food-based power during the film, I feel like that was just a missed opportunity. That would be the first thing I would address to fix issues in the game.
Yes.
Let's see. That would also, by making it a GURPS game, it would be easy to have a tech level substitution that would be, it would replace the switch between the real world and the food world.
Yeah.
Because the real world is primitive, but there's giant monsters everywhere that will step on you.
Oh yeah. That's the epic level adventure is going into the real world.
Yes. Let's see. I otherwise the mechanics would basically just be GURPS, but worse for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, God. That's as much of that as I want to talk about. I am now getting the heebie-jeebies. I'm realizing that would have been a great answer to a previous question.
Cheezle T. Weenus, jerky penis.
All right, this is actually a good question because it specifically addresses us and the way that we handle game reviews. Hello, Hackfressen. Every time you review a game, you instantly start talking about how certain parts of it are broken and mandatory for a player to exploit. Panache in 7C, for instance. Yeah, I did that. It's my fault. Sorry, everybody. Now, obviously, when you do this in combat-centric games, that's totally fair, since combat is always resolved mechanically, and a game that's all about combat needs to be balanced. However, you also tend to rant at some length about how the combat in old White Wolf games is broken. Here's the thing, I don't think it matters if combat is unbalanced as hell and vampire or whatever, because if you're playing those games anything close to how they were designed to be played, you're only going to see combat every third or fourth session and spend the rest of your time listening to the Crux Shadows and whining and whining about being immortal or whatever. So here's my question. Why do you always focus on min-maxing your characters for fighting in every game you review? Donka, Rolf.
Well, that's just Jeff. Jeff focuses on min-maxing his character in every game, regardless of if he's going to play it or not.
It's useful for reviewing even old, dumb games, is the thing I'd have to say on this. If you're just going to sit around with your friends and play Pretend Vampire, why did you buy a book of combat rules?
Also that, because the problem is, you can say, oh, well, this game, it doesn't matter if it's unbalanced as long as everybody agrees not to be unbalanced with it, and you're like, okay, great, but then who cares?
That's kind of like when Kevin Smith released Jersey Girl, and he was like, this isn't a movie for critics. Critics won't understand or get this movie. That's sort of like when a game designer's like, this isn't a game for combat. There's combat rules in here, and they're terrible.
There's combat rules, and it's a third of the book, but don't you worry. That's not what this book is about.
Yeah, it's still a relevant part of the game to review.
Now, if you are in something like Numenon or whatever, you can't become ridiculously OP combat crazy because the game literally isn't about that at all.
Or my current game that I've been reading like a madman, even though it's not next week's game, Everway, where you play as five pictures and three tarot cards. I don't think you can min-max that.
No. There's certain games where if you've decided to just eschew combat, then that's fine and it doesn't really matter. And the thing is, if you're doing, say, Vampire the Masquerade, but you're doing LARP, then yeah, it doesn't really matter how min-maxed your character is for combat, because 99% of the time, you're going to be sitting in an alleyway somewhere smoking a cigarette and complaining to someone else about something in your trench coat.
Probably about someone else. From what I understand of LARPing, it's mostly just click development.
Well, the big thing is, you don't really have a lot of NPCs since your DM can't be like, and now I'm going to be this person and this person.
Yeah.
So you have to only interact with the other people, which means the only people you're going to complain about are the other players.
Yeah. Here's the thing I feel like when I hear stuff like that, where, oh, combat doesn't happen very often in this game. It doesn't matter if the combat is balanced. Okay, but during the occasional times where it does happen, is it fun? Because if it's not, because it's all broken and shitty, then it's still not a very well-designed system.
Well, yeah. I mean, imagine you were playing D&D and it had a... like a third of the book was dedicated to social rules.
Yeah.
And I could make a character that could walk into the kingdom and become king. And you're like, oh yeah, well, you know, most of the game is hack and slash hobo murder. But the second you get into a point where it's like, yeah, but now this session is about dealing with intrigue in the court. And you're like, oh yeah, my character walks in and just owns everyone. I take over the court. Everyone is my vassal.
Right. It's really important that your game hold together in most circumstances. It doesn't matter how rarely something occurs. If my shoe has a spike that fires into my heel one time in every 20 steps, I'm not going to sell my shoes by saying 95% of the steps you take, you don't have a spike driven into your heel. Also, these aren't really about having spikes driven into your heel. It's just something that happens from time to time. Honestly, I don't know why you don't just ignore the spike being driven into your heel.
True.
Right?
Also, I'm sorry I put that spike in your heel.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We don't need to air that on the show, though, so come on.
I'm just saying that balance is an important part of the game, and when you're looking at a set of mechanics, the first thing you want to try and do is break them. That's how reviewing works. That's why, you know, when Consumer Reports puts out their thing about washing machines, they're like, we ran 8,000 loads of laundry through this thing, and then it broke. And people are like, well, you're not supposed to run 8,000 loads of laundry through it. Yes, but it does generate useful data.
Yeah.
There you go. So, also, I'm a horrible min-maxer, and I'm reviewing these games for people like me.
Yep.
There you go. All right, Dear Fuckface the Cuntnificent, and also John.
Yeah,
I'm the nice one.
Suck it down.
Oh, you're so mean. I'm going to start being mean to the listeners, too. Oh, why? You've had that sitting there the whole time.
I have.
Oh, I was going to skip that question, too. Oh, why are people so mean to me? All right, little fuckhead, here we go. I'm a child of the 90s. What a surprise. By the time I was old enough to take planes, the referenced phenomenon had ceased. So I got to ask, what was the deal with airline food? The deal with airline food is that you're a piece of shit.
Don't be sad.
No, I'm not. I'm just being mean because that's what people like, apparently. Yours and Kane, Golgoroth. What was the deal with airline food?
The deal with airline food is they actually gave you airline food.
I know. The complaints of yesteryear sound so shallow now when they don't give you shit.
They're like, oh man, I went on this flight and they only gave me a sandwich and a bag of chips. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
And nowadays, you have to order a weird soda to get them to offer you the whole can.
Yeah. You're like, hey man, can I get one of the sodas no one drinks? Give me a Diet ginger ale. And they're like, all right, here's the can.
Yeah.
No one else is going
to
want this.
I have to dump this out when I get to the end, or I can give it to you, you goddamn system. That's me, min-maxing airplanes.
Yeah, he's mastered the system of airplane travel.
It used to be that mastering the system of airplane travel meant ordering the beef option.
Because
it was the good one. The fish option was terrible, and it tasted like rubbery, sweaty fish.
Yep.
So, I don't know. The deal is that it was unpleasant because it had to be microwaved and often had to be stored in a type of container that could be taken from low altitude to high altitude and also be stored for long periods of time before it was served.
Well, yeah, the meals basically declined to the point where they stopped giving a fuck and then didn't give it to you.
Yeah.
Because it started out sort of okay, and then they pretty much just were microwave TV dinners.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just anything we could serve that were like sandwiches. So, we'd give you pretty much flight Lunchables.
Yeah.
And then it was just nothing.
Of course, they don't actually care if you bring food on the plane now.
No, I can show up with a bag of McDonald's and be like, fuck you, I'm eating a burger, I don't care.
Yeah, my recent flight food has become a Subway sandwich. Not a Subway from Subway, but like a hero sandwich. Mm-hmm. I like bringing a meatball sub on the plane.
Yeah, what I like bringing is just onion and garlic sub.
I bring French onion soup on every flight I go on.
What I like to do is get a nice, pungent slice of fish.
Slice of fish.
Yeah. Get a nice slice of fish.
I like bringing just French onion soup, but I have to separate it into a whole bunch of different 3-ounce containers. And then I bring them all together into a single larger empty container onto the plane with me, which everyone really appreciates, watching me pour soup into a bowl from a variety of tiny squeeze bottles.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I do on planes. That's the deal with airline food. Thanks, Golgoroth. I don't hate you.
I love you. I love all the people.
All right, we got time for maybe one or two more questions, so we're going to go through the last two here. First one coming to us from Mean Gene Okerlund.
Oh, Mean Gene's
back. Remember
this?
Yeah, we answered his question on some episode. I forget which. I sent you some questions and threatened to destroy you utterly if you didn't answer them to my liking. Then you answered them, but you answered them terribly. You implicated me in your April Fool's shenanigans.
Take that, Mean Gene.
But I've been talking to Mrs. Okerlund, and she told me to give you another chance. So answer this question or face my wrath. What is the best monster Godzilla fought?
The best monster Godzilla fought was inside all of us.
It's racism. The best monster that Godzilla fought was the inequality of the glass ceiling.
Lol. The best monster that Godzilla fought was Matthew Broderick. Come at me, internet.
That's not Godzilla, though. That's Godzilla 94 or whatever. No, Godzilla 98, I think.
Godzilla, whenever that came out,
who cares? Who cares? It's terrible. Have you ever actually watched that movie?
I watched that movie in theaters.
Oh, my God. It's so bad.
I've seen that multiple
times. That has one of my least favorite movie tropes, which is the jaded New Yorker thing, where there's Godzilla stomping around, and you've got Hank Azaria going, oh, it's another parade. It's like, fucking, you, that's not what you think. There is clearly an earthquake happening. Would you knock it off with the jaded New York stereotype? Okay, so anyway, real answer, got one?
Best thing he ever fought, Smog Monster.
Smog Monster, I do not remember that thing's name. Okay, and I am going to go with fucking Gamera, who is friends to all children.
Friend to all children.
Okay, he says, you are wrong, it's Biollante, who is half Rosebush, half Godzilla, and controlled by the soul of a dead lady. Nothing can top that. Nothing. Really nothing? Not even Jet Jaguar, who's a giant robot controlled by a tiny boy in shorts? I don't know.
I don't know.
Expect my vengeance shortly. Mean Gene Okerlund. Thanks. We're looking forward to it. Did you need our address?
Hedorah. There we go.
Go, Hedorah. Yeah, okay. That is a pretty good one. I'll give you that. I liked it when he fought a flying saucer, too.
Also good.
Yeah. Okay. Last question, and this is a big one, so it's going to take us a little time to go through. This is a little system mastery gets serious.
All right.
Hey, dudes. Oh, sorry. Hey, let me say that correctly. I didn't get that right.
It's a little wild and a little strange when you make your home out on the range.
Hey, dudes. Are you guys going to talk about the Emily Garland weird debacle? It seems like something you might bring up. Do you think Weird handled things badly enough to be worth boycotting? From Abaddon.
Well, given that I don't use any weird miniatures to begin with, me saying I was going to boycott them doesn't do anything.
I actually had been considering buying into Malifaux. I really like some of the models in their line, but I actually do really dislike toxic gaming environments. Honestly, I'm a big fan of War Machine and Hordes, but I stay off their forums entirely because ever since they published with that play like you've got a pair thing, which I was like, oh, good. Thanks for dragging balls into your War Machine game. Also, I don't want people being blindly aggressive at each other. That's not fun. It's not a good game.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know too much about the weird culture. I mean, yes, we both read this stuff about
and
Emily.
And for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about now.
This is a, you should go and look it up. It's a woman named Emily Garland who wrote an article about.
Basically,
article,
the problem with essentially white male terrorism in the gaming community.
Yeah, the title of her, I don't even know what to call it exactly. I'm just going to go with article, is white male, or gaming has a white male terrorism problem. And she's describing her own personal stories of encountering a lot of aggression, kind of sexual harassment, rape, being talked down to while just trying to be someone who's playing the Malifaux line of games.
Yeah.
And, you know, any games, really. A lot of it's just stories about going into a game store and having people deliver just horrible things. There's part of it where it's got the old enough to bleed, old enough to breed line.
Yeah.
Which, no one should say. No one who works at a store or goes in a store should say that.
No, that's one of those problems with the stores as well is, like, if you're working for a, like, corporation, and I'm working for like Target or whatever, and I make just the worst comment and someone complains, I'm fired.
Yeah, but at a game store, if you're there, you probably own it because none of them have more than two employees.
Oh, yeah. You're either the dude who owns it or the dude who owns its friend who then he gave a job to.
Yeah, so that's a real cultural issue that makes it so that game stores can often be very unpleasant to be in. Just a lack of a proper work environment.
Yeah.
So here's the basics. To really boil this down, what do I think of the Emily Garland weird debacle? I think she's right. I think the industry has a bunch of horrible problems. It's completely dominated by gross white dudes. I also think that as a show that is to gross white dudes, we probably aren't the right experts to really have a strong voice or, you know, say anything in judgment of what she was writing. Although I do agree, I think there's a lot of toxicity in the environment. One thing I would stress to people, just being asked about it, don't take the things that she's writing personally. One of the things that really matters when it comes to these sort of complaints, and they're right, is that it does. She's not indicting you. She's not saying 100% of the white people who play role-playing games are horrifying rapist terrorists. What she's saying is that there are enough that the industry is toxic and unpleasant, and the percentage that need to be there for the industry to be toxic and unpleasant is really low.
And the problem, really, that it boils down to is if you've only got 1 in 100 people, that's awful. Mm-hmm. Like, just really awful. But the other 99 people don't say anything to that one person to stop him from being awful, then it doesn't matter if there's only one, because then if you see someone being terrible and no one is stopping them or coming to the aid of the person who's being harassed, then even if you're not the one doing it, you're not helping.
Yeah.
And it makes it so that the environment seems like you're okay with this.
And here's the other thing. And this is something that, you know, when I read this initially, I was like, I don't even know if I want to answer this. And here's why. Because me saying, oh, well, I'm not sexist and I'm not racist and I don't harass women in game stores is worthless information. I mean, it's just throwing a choir behind the, well, not all men type scenario, which is useless.
Yeah.
It's not helpful. No one cares that I tell women that I'm not going to harass them personally in game stores. My job should be to stop other men from being horrible in game stores.
And God knows there have definitely been points where I myself have not been one who has, like, shouted down someone who's been terrible before.
Yeah. I have had it come up a couple of times. And, again, this is because I have similar if different experiences. I'm queer, and I play role-playing games in stores from time to time. And as you can imagine, there is a serious problem for homophobia and bigotry in that regard in game stores. Just a ton. You know how you outgrew saying fag when you were 15? You know who didn't? Anyone who plays role-playing games in a game store.
Yep.
So also anyone who plays on Xbox Live.
Yes.
So those are the two places where that word still is good. So if you feel like you need to get it out, those are apparently the places you go. And for a long time, I put up with it. I was like, yeah, okay, uh-huh, fag. Yeah, sure, that is funny that bad guy character in this game is gay. But eventually, for my own sake, I stopped taking it. And I remember there was a point where I told a guy off. I play 40K. I used to play 40K. Do you remember I used to have pink dice?
Yeah.
And people would make fun of the pink dice because they were gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I am also bisexual. And that's not why my dice are pink. My dice are pink because the carpet is dark gray and they are very easy to find.
But yeah, but it's one of those things where even then, like, the problem being that if you stand up to one person and be like, yeah, well, fuck you, then that's just one person. And then they're going to go, oh, well, that guy is an asshole and I won't say anything to him, but they're still going to be toxic.
Yeah, the environment is toxic. The best you can do is try and fix the way that you and your environment are. That's the best you can do. You don't need to defend your environment to this woman. You can't, really. So the best thing you can do is take this as an opportunity to improve yourself and improve your environment. Take this sort of thought as a chance to conduct a self-evaluation. Are there things I'm doing in a game store that I could be doing better?
Yeah.
As to the thought of boycotting weird, I'm a little on the fence about that one way or the other. I feel like they've made a clear mistake by building a toxic culture.
Well, you look at something like, say, League of Legends.
Yeah.
League of Legends was a game that their entire user base was as toxic as you could get. Just the worst.
Yes.
And they went out of their way to try and change that. Like, as far as hiring professional behavioral psychologists, doing everything they could to try and turn it around. And that was a game company that said, while the whole nature of toxic players is not really our business, we are making it our business.
Yeah, well, they don't really have a choice, because if you're playing a League of Legends, you are playing in their school. You're playing in their playground. You have to. League of Legends doesn't run unless you have, what's the company that runs it again?
Riot.
Right, unless you have Riot turned on. Where Weird Miniature is the only place that this toxic environment that they can control exists is their forums.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is they went and decided, instead of going, oh, we're going to have a much better harassment policy, we're going to go ahead and make sure that our admins are on the lookout for anything that's inappropriate, anything like that, they just decided, no, it's fine, that's the internet, it's boys will be boys mentality, yeah, and we'll just let them do that.
They did some unbelievably stupid shit. Apparently they put up a thread that was just like, here's the thread where you guys can come and say racist and sexist stuff if you want, everyone get it all out.
Yeah.
That does not work. That just attracts trolls.
And that is the main difference, is not only did Riot do their whole overhaul on the toxic community because, you know, it's a good thing, but it makes really good business sense. No one wants to play your game if they feel like playing the game means I have to deal with horrible, hostile, terrible people.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I'm only thinking from a logistical sense here that it's way easier to fix a game where you can give little dealies away for free, because that's a lot of how Riot eventually fixed it, where they were like, all right, there's this reward system where if you play well, then people will vote nicely for you, and you'll eventually get, like...
Well, it's also a lot of reporting. Reporting,
yeah, absolutely.
If you say that someone was being, like, a terrible person, we will actually do something about it.
Yeah, and I feel like the best thing that Weird should do right now is just shut the forums down. Take them away, and then give them back with real rules.
Well, and real mods.
Yeah, and real mods. And that's the thing is, I don't know if they're a big enough company to do that. If they're not a big enough company to have real mods, because let's face it, Malifaux is not huge.
No.
It's a little tiny game run by, I would say... Yeah,
unless you are Games Workshop, you're probably not a big enough company to afford a large stable of people.
Yeah, you know, you can't afford to moderate a massive forum. Yeah, it's so easy to build a forum. I mean, I'm terrified of our forum that one of these days I'm actually going to have to go in and start blocking posts and people and shit. I don't want to do that. Thankfully, everyone's been really cool on those forums so far.
Yeah.
But, you know, you hit that point where it attains critical internet mass, and if you can't afford to keep the people on there, your best bet is just to take that shit away.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's what I would say that should be happening with them right now. Should they be boycott? I don't know. At least they should be boycott with a clear goal.
Well, yeah. If the goal is make the company actually acknowledge problems and try to be proactive in making an environment where all people are welcome to play, great. If it's just, I'm going to boycott them to punish them and then never play whatever,
yeah,
okay.
If the boycott is run them into the ground forever, then I don't necessarily agree with it, because I want the gaming industry to thrive. I want the chance for the gaming industry to thrive and improve and so on.
I just don't want the assholes in the gaming industry to thrive.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Just until it, I would support a boycott if it had and maybe it does. I don't actually know that much about this. If it had a clear, concise set of goals that we wanted them to accomplish as an industry to grow.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. I hope we didn't completely shoot ourselves in the foot with that discussion, because that's a really sensitive topic. So that's going to be it for this week. Johnny, got anything else you want to say?
Not really. Just go ahead and be sure to flood our comments section on the page with all of your opinions that we'll then delete.
No, don't. Just keep being cool, everybody. We've done so well. We've gone 2 years now without me actually having to delete anything anyone said.
Yeah, we have yet to have a terrible point in our comments where someone's like, hey, man, let me just be real terrible.
I think maybe once, like a year ago, someone tried to bait us into saying something, and that was it.
Yeah.
And that'll never work either. So, you know, don't worry about trying to do that sort of thing. Just have fun on those comments and be nice to each other. That's all we want.
That's all anyone really wants.
So thanks so much for listening. As always, this has been Afterthought. You can find our regular show, System Mastery, or our regular show, which you can find on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, you can find our show, Regular Show.
That's us.
That's us. That's the two of us.
I'm JC Qualls or whatever his name is. That's me.
Yeah, I'm DJ Qualls.
He's DJ Qualls. I don't remember anybody who makes that show. He's DJ Qualls, and I'm J.K. Simmons. And
and I need pictures of Spider-Man.
Pictures. Oh, boy. Okay. So, that, as always, you can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, System Mastery on Gmail, Facebook, or Twitter. Send us your questions. Send us your game recommendations. Check out our Movie Mastery show and support us on Patreon, Patreon/System Mastery. Do all those things. Have a great time and have a good week.